better off.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 159 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So the Mets had a really good week last week since we last recorded. They took 2 out of 3 from a very good Padres team last week, and then they swept the lowly A's over the weekend.
Barely.
two of the three wins were very hard fought. One of them was not. in Friday night's game, A's pitchers walked 17 batters, which is one shy of a major league record in a single game. I recapped that game for Mason Avenue, and it was probably the most chaotic baseball game I've ever seen in my life. but yeah,
I missed it. That's when I got from the box score. And I thought I was very confused. The box score was very confusing.
Like, is that a typo?
No, it wasn't. The box score does not capture just the pure chaos that was that baseball game. The Mets put up 2 separate 6-run innings. In each of those 2 innings, they only had 1 hit. In each of them. And that is the first time that has happened going back to at least, I think, 1957. Shout out Sarah Langs tweeted that and they said it on the broadcast. They read her tweet on the broadcast that she researched it and she couldn't find another instance of that going back to at least 1957 of a team scoring, having 2 separate 6-run innings and only getting 1 hit each time they did that. So
that's hard to do. You have to work at
it's
that.
Really hard to do. Yeah, it was painful. It got to the point where it was just like physically painful to watch.
Well, a lot of these guys don't belong in the major. Like, you felt for like the one guy who was making his major league debut. That was hard to watch. Like, I was like, the Mets were winning, but
was really hard to watch. Yeah. And one of the guys that walked a bunch of dudes was actually Jerry's Familia, former Met. That was just, I watch a depressing amount of Washington Nationals, being in DC and I don't know, man, the A's might be worse than the Nationals. I think they are. It was awful to watch. The Mets narrowly won the other 2 games.
But, you know, kudos to Ronnie and Gary, who were calling out the A's ownership, though. They called it a farce. I forget what else what Ronnie said, but, you know, they said incomprehensible what they've done, how they've, like, sold away all their stuff. I mean, look, even the Mets had Bassett. Because they were saying, well, they've helped benefit all the Mets rivals.
Sean Murphy absolutely killing it for the Atlanta Braves, of course.
But the Mets have also benefited. They have Canna and they have Marte. They have Bassett.
Yeah. I mean, Adam Oller not covering himself in glory in an A's uniform, for sure. He is part of that struggling pitching staff, which is through the first whatever games of the season, it's like historically bad, like the worst pitching staff in history, which is it's sad. It was sad to watch it, but it was to the Mets' benefit.
The fans deserve so much better.
They do. And it was cool to see, like, honestly, solidarity with A's fans, because they were hanging banners that said it isn't our fault and things like that at the Coliseum. Because, you know, of course, like, and this is true of every other team that tries to, like, rebuild, air quotes, or like tear it down or whatever. They say that, like, you know, oh, we're not investing in the team because fans aren't showing up. And it's like, fans will show up if you invest in the team. If you build it, they will come. And A's fans have done a very good job of making that statement very clearly. They're even organizing like an anti-boycott for one of the games in June. I forget exactly which game it is, but the fans are organizing an anti-boycott where they basically like all show up and like say, listen, this is what you could have every day.
I love that idea.
I do too.
The A's fan base is overall pretty A plus in my, cute. Is an excellent fan base. No, too cute. Forget it. Excellent fan base. Love the A's folks. They are.
I hope they don't leave Oakland, but it seems like it's setting up for that.
I was going to say, I feel like this is a real life major league situation that we have going on here.
It definitely is. I was just listening earlier today to our friends on the Tipping Pitches podcast. And as folks who listen to that podcast as well, if you don't, I highly recommend them. And this is that they are not connected with us in any way. This is just a wholehearted endorsement because they are great. Bobby and Alex are great, but Alex is an A's fan. And Bobby said that his reaction, Bobby, a Mets fan, said that his reaction to watching like the A's and the Mets was similar to that scene in Home Alone where Kevin takes out the photo of, finds the photo of his brother's girlfriend and he says, Buzz, your girlfriend, woof. Alex, the A's, woof. And yeah. That's the exact sentiment that I had while watching the A's. But overall, things are going well for the Mets right now.
Except for the offense, which we probably should touch on that, how they barely won the next game.
So. Yeah, we'll get to the offense overall in a little bit, which is kind of like feast or famine a little bit, not in the sense that they like put up a bunch of runs and then they don't score, although that's happened too, but like more like part of the lineup is hitting and another part isn't. But
I mean, that dude had a 17 ERA, come on.
Yeah. But what we should talk about before then is that there's been some roster shakeup since we last recorded as well.
It's happening.
Obviously there's the big one, which we'll get to in a minute. But the more minor ones were that Jose Buhto was called up from AAA to make a spot start yesterday, and he did great. Much better than his major league debut. Obviously he didn't last too long in the game. He still walked a lot of batters, but he kept the Mets in the game and they won the game. And that is all you can ask for from, like, I don't even know, is he like the eighth starting pitcher on the depth chart at this point?
Yeah, I guess the Churv wasn't available.
He had pitched.
I think he didn't line up in the rotation.
No, he had just pitched.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it probably would have been him. But I'm sure we will see the Churv at some point. He's pitching well in AAA.
He is. That makes me so happy.
Buhto was subsequently immediately set back down today.
Like you do.
He's like the Grandpa Simpson meme.
Thank you so much for sticking in that game for so long. We really needed it. Bye.
Bye.
The spot starter, the most thankless job in baseball. So he was subsequently sent back down. The other bullpen arm that was brought up for yesterday's game was Jimmy Yakabonis, was brought up for yesterday's game because Steven Nogosic was placed on the injured list because in Friday's game, in that chaos, Nogosic was brought in for long relief, and I think Buck Showalter probably intended for him to pitch the rest of the game, given how much the Mets were up in that game. But unfortunately, he was hit in the elbow with a line drive and had to leave the game. And imaging luckily revealed no structural damage. It looked way worse than, like, it kind of grazed his elbow. Like, the broadcast booth didn't think that it hit his elbow square, it did graze it, and then it hit him in the back. But it was enough to give him a hearty bone bruise. So he is on the injured list. And so Jimmy Yakabonis was brought up and he pitched in yesterday's game as well and had a shaky inning, but he got through it thanks in part to a fantastic diving catch from Brandon Nimmo that basically saved the game. Because otherwise the A's would have walked it off. So Yakabonis somehow got through the inning unscathed and the Mets went on to win the game in extra innings yesterday. So thanks for your service, Jimmy Yakabonis.
Well, if you look at him very quick, he kind of looks like Ice Davis.
I hadn't seen that, but
I can
see
it. Yeah.
Because, like, I was watching the post game, and they were just, like, showing highlights, and I didn't know who it was. I was like, is that Ice Davis?
On the mound there?
Like, what?
He is an extremely New Jersey king, so I love Iacobonis for that. But yeah, so he's in the bullpen now. Dennis Santana was designated for assignment.
Wait, was that his major league debut, Iacobonis's, or is he been
he had pitched with the Marlins before.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, Dennis Santana was designated for assignment when Buddo and Iacobonis came up. Now we've had yet more shuffling because
get the trumpet. Oh no, well, you can't get the trumpets.
No trumpets. Brett Beatty has been called up to the big leagues. Finally.
Yay. He hit one too many grand slams to ignore.
Yeah. He hit his developmental objectives or whatever.
Which was to like blow out the MILB Twitter account every night with some other sparkling play. I mean, really, like, he was almost embarrassing to any human being who had any say in keeping him down.
Like, he clearly didn't belong there.
Yeah.
He was hitting like 400 with like a 1,000 OPS. I think it was
over 1,000.
It was like 1,036 or
something. Yes.
And really, like, every single night there was some other like amazing highlight. It became quite a joke.
It was silly.
Yay, they got her. They fixed it. Good job.
You admitted your mistake.
Nice job, Billy. You did it. You did the thing.
Yeah, and I mean, this shows, like, I know I joke about the developmental objectives thing because it's just funny, but, like, it shows that that was always nonsense, right? Like, we knew it was nonsense, but, like, this was always, like, them coming up with an excuse to give the veteran Escobar a chance to, you know, to play, and he played so badly, and Brett Beatty played so well that they basically had no choice anymore.
Well, I think the most hysterical part was, I think he hit the grand slam with Billy Epler in attendance.
Yes, he did.
That's right.
Yes. I mean, ultimately, this was the right move all along. The ultimate right move would have been to not lie about why you're doing this and to have kept Brett Beatty on the roster to start with. But, you know, at least they, you know, cut their losses pretty early with Escobar and didn't wait this out for like 2 months.
Although he will still be getting at bats. I mean, there's plenty of room in the lineup for Escobar. He's going to get his reps. I mean, there's definitely no question that this is the right move all around, but the nice thing is that Escobar will get some time, maybe a little less time, will expose him less. But we do still get some FOGO from this one.
Exactly. And he'll be put in more positions to succeed that way.
Yeah.
He won't get overexposed, as Maggie said. He'll be facing lefties a lot more often, which is good because he has much better numbers against left-handed pitching. It can be exactly as we said all along on the podcast coming into the season. He can be the super utility role. He can be the complementary DH platoon partner to Daniel Vogelbach. He can play on the infield on occasion to spell Beatty or Jeff McNeil, or allow Jeff McNeil to shift to the outfield to spell one of the corner outfielders. Though Tommy Pham has been doing a fantastic job as the fourth outfielder, I will say.
Just like we always said he would, as I recall. Don't look it up.
Don't fact check us.
It's right. It's right. You don't have to look it up.
Yeah. But
sorry, Tommy Pham.
Yeah, I apologize. I apologize early on for underestimating Tommy Pham. We'll see what happens over the course of the entire season, but for now, he's making me eat crow, and I'm very happy about it.
Yep. I will happily look stupid for underestimating Tommy Pham.
In spring training, he was really bad. What else?
He was really bad in spring.
And like for some number of years before that also.
Yeah,
it's not a new development.
No, but
and
I'm happy.
I consider all of this just gravy at this point. But you know,
but this was having Beatty playing third base close to every day, if not every day, and allowing Escobar to shift to this more like flexible bench role while also having Tommy Pham around. Like, this was always the optimal roster construction, and it gives the Mets more flexibility, which they need. So I'm really happy that Beatty's up here, and hopefully he never sniffs the minor leagues again. Well, like,
I don't know if it, there's any use complaining about it, because I mean, what's done is done at this point, but I feel like it's also hard for him now, because I mean, in some ways it's good because the bottom of the lineup has been so bad that anything he gives them is better than what they've been getting, obviously. But also, now there's also pressure on him to perform. So I feel like if they had just called him up from the beginning, he could have settled easier than what it is now.
Although, at least he is coming off of quite a high...
True.
A high watermark for his career. I mean, except for the part where he hit a home run in his first at bat. That was probably the high
with his family in attendance.
Hard to beat
killing
that.
But killing it for a couple weeks in the minors, while it is not going to help anyone reach developmental objectives that aren't real, at the very least, he's coming in feeling pretty good about himself. And that is a good start.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the taste that he got last year, even though it was cut off prematurely because he injured his thumb, I think that you know, allows there to be a little less pressure, or for him to feel a little less pressure, because like when he first came up last year, it was in the dead heat of a playoff race.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And that's maximum pressure. At least now it's April. True, he's got the whole season. So hopefully that'll be to his advantage, and hopefully he'll settle in and be the Mets third baseman of the future. But speaking of things that aren't real, the corresponding roster move for Brett Beatty was to place Tim LoCastro on the IL with back spasms. I'm air quoting, folks. You can't see it, but I am air quoting heavily. Back spasms.
Look, can you provide evidence that there aren't back spasms?
No, I cannot.
Is okay. He in his 30s? Because we all have back spasms.
He is 30 Man. Years old.
I forgot so he's 30. He might have just slept weird the other night.
It's true. It's true. I think it, like, listen, I'm not saying this is entirely invented, but I think it might be he is simply 30 years old and woke up and said, my back feels a little weird. Tim, you have back spasms. Repeat, you have back spasms.
Yeah. Billy Epler was like, hey, Tim, how you doing? And it was like, oh, my back's been a little funky. And it's like, aha, that's the one.
Back spasms. taking a note straight out of the Tommy Hunter playbook, and, you know, going on the IL with a back ailment that is probably based in reality, but may be greatly exaggerated for the purposes of Mets roster manipulation. because apparently the Mets are very terrified to expose Tim LoCastro to waivers. So that's the situation that allows the Mets to hang on to Tim LoCastro and keep him in reserve while also promoting Brett Beatty. I always, like, I thought I figured Tim LoCastro was going to be the roster casualty. I just didn't figure it would be this.
But I also love how the rumors that Beatty was getting called up were circulating yesterday before the game, and Tim LoCastro served as the pinch hitter yesterday, or pinch runner yesterday.
He sure did. He went out on a high note. I mean, he like, you know, he doesn't have a hit yet this season, but he's been on base. And when he's been a pinch runner, he's stolen bases pretty much every time.
But I guess the Mets knew he would have back spasms in the future.
Crystal ball, future back spasms.
Because they were already well prepared to call Beatty up before his back spasms magically appeared.
Yeah. In other ailments that are in the I am 30 or 40 years old and I do not need this category, Max Scherzer's start Jose Buto actually started kind of in place of Max Scherzer, although it wasn't exactly like that because this is a long West Coast road trip without many days off, and the Mets were kind of always planning on slotting a sixth starter in to give guys a break. But it turned out that Max Scherzer, he needed to slot into Max Scherzer's space in the rotation because Max Scherzer is experiencing some, quote, lingering soreness below his scapula, kind of like right under the back of your shoulder blade. I've actually also experienced soreness in that exact area, and I am over 30, so I can relate to that.
I'm not a major league pitcher, though. Soreness there, but it was stress. It was extremely stress related. So I would just like to suggest that, just in case, Max go and take care of himself a little bit. Just
have
like
a nice spa day.
Yeah, spa day.
De-stress.
Like, binge Abbott Elementary.
Ooh, yes. Oh, we love Abbott Elementary.
Yeah. Take it easy, Max. You're good.
He claims that he could have pitched. It was similar to, I guess, the Verlander situation in the sense that, like, oh, you know, if we were in, like, the playoffs or something, could have pitched. But we all saw what it was like when Max Scherzer was pitching through injury. And
well, they always say this stuff. And like, yes, okay, Max, you could have pitched. We believe you.
Sure, Max. It's fine.
Now go lie down. Fine. Like, okay.
Now go take a nap.
Whatever you say, man.
All right, Grandpa. Go take
sounds
a nap.
Like something someone who can't pitch now would say.
My I definitely could have pitched shirt has people asking a lot of questions about my shirt.
But he did say it's something he's dealt with before and knows how to take care of. So
that is not as reassuring as they seem to think it is. I'm just saying, this comes up a lot where they're like, oh no, I have this all the time. I'm like, you shouldn't.
This is like Carlos Carrasco's elbow maintenance. He's like, this happens every spring. It's fine. You're just like, okay.
It's like when I bend down and my knees pop six ways till Sunday, and every once in a while a random stranger will be like, are you okay? And I'm like, no, it just does this.
It just does this. If I just ignore it, eventually it goes away.
I'm 37 years old. I will die soon. It's not important.
My ankles just decided they don't want to support me anymore.
It's fine.
Why shouldn't they join the rest of the world?
Speaking of our very good but very old pitchers, Justin Verlander is closer to returning, it seems.
Hey.
He threw a bullpen. It went well. He will throw another bullpen, and then he will progress to live batting practice, and then he will have a rehab assignment. It seems like he is still theoretically on track to be back before the end of the month.
Sure.
But we are kind of like, we have already reached like kind of the tipping point with the Mets pitching depth where like if Max is not okay to go on Wednesday and we have Scherzer and Verlander out at the same time, that becomes a not sustainable situation.
It's not great.
Not what you want.
Yeah. So
that is like a 2 week max situation that could be maintained.
Yeah.
And we're already a week into it.
We've already had one Jose Budo start. Like, we can't do like two more of those. That's not a thing that can happen.
But you have the Churv.
The Churv could also start.
It's true.
But again, we can't have a rotation that consists of Kodai Senga, Tyler McGill, David Peterson, and the Churv all at the same time.
And that is only
and Carlos Carrasco potentially broken.
Listed. Okay, there's the other one.
Carlos Carrasco is still not convinced he's okay either.
Well, but how much fun would it be if we had both the Ghost Fork and the Churv in the rotation? Like two unique pitches. Come on.
It's a fanciful thing to think about.
I think it would be great if Senga was the third starter and the Churv was the fifth starter.
Yeah. Like, you can't be doing
this. That's how you do it.
Can't be doing this.
I mean, to be fair, Gary and Ron, we're talking about this either Sunday or Saturday. I can't remember. It might have been Saturday's because I was recapping Saturday's game. That they're going to have to manage Scherzer and Verlander all year because you need them to be 100% in the playoffs. So if you're going to, you know, give them 2 weeks here, 2 weeks there, it might hopefully pay off down the line.
Yeah, I support that. Just not at the same time.
Yeah. They need to trade off.
Yeah. Guys, get
they need
together.
To get in their vacation request forms in a timely manner.
They need to take turns. It's what you learn when you're very young to take turns.
Take turns.
So yeah, we hope that this Scherzer thing is not too serious and that Verlander comes back soon, because
I did see, I think, was it Puma who said Scherzer's said he was good to go for Wednesday.
Oh, good. I hadn't seen that. Excellent.
So I think he's okay.
Your good news podcast.
Woo-hoo. Yeah. Woo-hoo. Breaking news. Scherzer's good to go.
Scherzer's good to go.
And now for today's fun football scores. Nerves nil, friends made 11. Goals 4, giggles 17.
Wheelchair access 1. Feeling left out? No.
Celebrations 3. High fives 21.
McDonald's Fun Football. Free football coaching for all kids aged 5 to 11. Search McDonald's Football to find out more.
So the last sort of like Mets notes that I wrote down is I kind of wrote down like some, like now that we're, you know, a couple weeks into the season, some positives right now and some negatives right now. And this was sort of what we were alluding to earlier about the tale of two parts of the lineup. The positives right now are that the top of the Mets batting order is absolutely raking. Nimmo
and has, only like 89% of that is Pete Alonso.
Right. I mean, but all of them, like Nimmo
yeah,
has
no,
a,
I mean, really.
Nimmo has a 146 WRC plus. He's second in the league in walks and he's killing it in the field. Francisco Lindor is currently the atop the leaderboard, the baseball reference leaderboard in WAR for position players. So he's the highest BWAR of anyone in baseball. Pete Alonso leads the league in home runs still, as we all know. And Starling Marte, even though he's like, he's killing it with the bat too, not quite as much as the other three, but doing really good. But he's notably stolen 7 bases, and that's like the second highest mark in the league for an individual. And the Mets as a team lead the National League in stolen bases. So you know, that part of the lineup, Pete Alonso and above, absolutely killing it. Below Pete Alonso, not as good.
It's not what you want.
I would say McNeil and Canna have been fine.
They're mixed bag.
They're walking a lot, I feel like.
All of them are.
Yeah.
All of them are. McNeil is doing so uncharacteristically. McNeil usually doesn't walk that much. McNeil is like a make contact guy. Don't strike out much. Don't walk much. Hit ball. High batting average. He's actually doing kind of the opposite of that right now. He's actually looking a lot like Daniel Vogelbach right now, where he's walking a lot, but he's not hitting much and he's not hitting for power. Not that McNeil is a power hitter to begin with, but those extra base hits are really not forthcoming for McNeil. McNeil's like biggest moment of the season probably so far, I think, was in this series opener against the Padres, like kind of as we were recording last week. McNeil had an RBI double that got the Mets on the board against Yu Darvish, and that was like probably his biggest hit of the season. But aside from that, he's like really not hit much. He was really the only guy that didn't get in on the party during the 17 walk game. He was like the only one who wasn't on base. Everybody else.
I would hate that. Oh, I would think
he
about
did
that
walk
for years.
He did walk once, I think.
Yeah.
But like he didn't, everybody else was just like either like walking all 3 times up or like getting hits. McNeil walked once and like, you know, wasn't as good as everybody else and did do a big batting helmet slam at one point.
yeah. Yes, he does.
He's going to scream the grown-up words into the helmet next time.
Yeah, he's been screaming a lot of grown-up words.
He did yesterday too.
He's not like truly slumping because again the walks are buoying his like his line, but yeah, he's not hitting enough. And Vogelbach has kind of been similar where he's like walking a lot but he hasn't been aggressive enough at the plate at all. He's like not swinging at anything, and you know that allows him to walk a lot, but also like sometimes they throw you pitches right down the heart of the plate because they know you're not swinging and he doesn't swing at them. And it's like, bro, you could probably hit that down the line for a double.
Well, also like there's, I mean, especially for Vogelbach, there's no shift.
No.
Like what is he losing?
He should be benefiting more.
Yeah. He like, even like more than Jeff McNeil. I've always thought I've been a little concerned that all the like pro offense moves, it's not that I thought that they would hurt Jeff McNeil, but just that they wouldn't benefit him as much as they benefit everyone else because he's already so dang good. But like Vogelbach, come on, just hit the ball. Like
try it out, man.
They literally changed the entire infield rule system to benefit you.
You are a pull lefty hitter. Like, this is your dream life. Like,
do it.
Begging you to actually take advantage of the environment that you're now in with the juiced baseball again, apparently, and this no shift rule. So you'd think he'd be benefiting more. He has yet to really hit his stride. Two Vogelbachs. To be fair to Daniel Vogelbach, the Mets have faced a lot of lefties early in the season, so he also hasn't, like, played regularly. Like, he hasn't really played, multiple days in a row, really at all yet. So it may
McNeil
just be...
McNeil is in there every day. McNeil doesn't so much have the excuse. Just, no.
Nor Canna either. And Canna's sort of been up and down, and it's balanced out to okay. So McNeil and Canna have kind of not quite hit their stride yet. Same with Daniel Vogelbach, perhaps because of playing.
Canna did have a big home run, though.
Yes.
You have to give Canna credit for
Canna
that.
Canna did have the really big home run. That kind of like McNeil's big double. That was like Canna's big moment so far this season, but they've each had the one big moment, and that's really been it. The vast majority of the production has come from the top half of the lineup. And then you have this like middle part in McNeil, Canna, Vogelbach that's been like, okay.
And then there's the other part. And then there's the worst thing.
Yeah, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah. The ugly is the bottom part of the lineup. Obviously, we already addressed the fact that Brett Beatty has been brought up. Hopefully that will improve the Escobar spot in the lineup a little bit. But you can't fix the catching spot, it seems like, right now. Tomas Nito is not hitting at all. Literally had, like, I think the past week he had a zero WRC plus.
I definitely got extremely confused at the game when I was looking at the lineup stats that they have for everybody, and I couldn't figure out why they were showing his batting average. And I realized, no, that was his OPS, like everyone else's.
Oof.
Yeah.
That's not, that's not good. When your OPS looks like a batting average, that's not
and
good.
And who else was who? It was Nito and one other guy. It was not great.
It was probably either Escobar or Guillorme. Both of them have not been good.
Yeah, I think it was Guillorme.
Was one of the guys who had a big day at the benefit of, or he benefited from the A's pitching staff on Friday. Like, I think he walked three times. So that raised his like on base percentage to like a respectable level, but he has not hit at all.
I think he's doing the best of the bunch, but it's still like a 240 average.
It's bad.
Yeah. It's not in the ones like the
not
other.
In the ones. No.
So he cleared that hurdle.
Mendoza line. Above. And unfortunately, Francisco Alvarez has not looked good with the bat so far. Hate to say.
It's so soon.
I'm not raising alarm bells.
No. I mean, just like, and for him, like developmentally, like it's still just, it's a big
deal. He's not good at controlling the running game.
Not at all. But who is these days right now?
True.
He's been thrown into an instantly harder environment to do that in. Obviously it's very early days. He just has the one hit so far, I think, in like 14, 15 at bats, something like that. And he's gone hitless since, like, I think he got his one hit in his first game, and he's gone hitless since then.
Yeah, that was his only hit in RBI.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, like, I will note, and this is like not an excuse, because like even if every single one of these dropped, like I think both Alvarez and Escobar would still have like pretty bad numbers. But both Escobar and Alvarez in particular have hit a few balls very hard that have gotten robbed through excellent defense. You can say a lot of things about the A's and how they played in that series, but they played excellent defense. They did.
Yeah.
The pitching staff was awful. It was mostly the pitchers, but they played excellent defense, and they robbed particularly Escobar, I think, of multiple hits in that series. So they've been, Escobar and Alvarez have been somewhat unlucky on the BAPIP, but it's not enough unlucky to make up for how bad they've been. Alvarez looks a little overeager, a little overmatched, but again, he's 21. This is gonna happen. Some growing pains. It'll be fine. The catching position continues to be a problem for the Mets and will be until either Alvarez figures it out, Omar Narvaez gets better, or they find some other long-term solution.
How's Mike Piazza these days?
Do you think he could still stand in the box?
I mean, nope. He did hit a home run in batting practice for Old Timers Day.
It's true he did.
So he's capable.
Anything's possible.
So that's kind of the offense, good news, bad news. There's also like kind of pitching trade-off, good news, bad news. The good news about the pitching is that McGill and Peterson and Budo for his one spot start continue to hold the fort, like better than you would think. Like the pitching has been fine. And David Robertson has been absolutely lights out in the bullpen. And most of the rest of the bullpen has been solid too. It's kind of been very similar to 2022 in the sense that they like, each of the relievers have had one or two like blow up terrible outings, but usually they don't come at the same time. So at least you have like one or two guys who are going well at the moment and you can rely on them. They've kind of spread out their badness sufficiently that it has not really cost them many games. Really this week, I mean, the Mets only lost one game last week and it happened because Buck Showalter used Dennis Santana in a high leverage situation when they were down by only one run and Dennis Santana gave up two additional tack on runs and the Mets ended up scoring one more run. So it kind of cost them the game ultimately.
I mean, Buck tried really hard to lose Sunday's game.
Yeah, he did. But they won anyway.
They did.
But, you know, he pitched Dennis Santana in high leverage, which was a bad choice. And Dennis Santana has since been designated for assignment. So he's not even on the team.
Billy Epler's like, I'm not going to let that one happen again.
I've seen enough.
Now, like, I mean, I'm not, again, I thought that there was a terrible decision by Buck. But the main issue is, and this is sort of the bad news side of it, is that the starting pitchers are not going deep enough into games, and it is causing a domino effect in the bullpen. And that is ultimately the problem. Buck feels like he has to. He shouldn't have to. He feels like he has to use these pitchers, these lower on the pecking order pitchers in high leverage situations because he doesn't want to wear out his higher leverage relievers who are being used too often because the starting pitchers can't go past the sixth inning, which is a problem.
Or even to the sixth inning. I mean, I feel like there's so many just not even getting through the fifth.
This past turn through the rotation, David Peterson pitched 5 2/3 innings, and that was the longest outing in that turn through the rotation. It was Scherzer 5, Senga 4 2/3, McGill 5, Peterson 5 2/3.
Why can't you all Carrasco be more 5. Like David Peterson?
Yeah, right? Why can't you all go deep into games like David Peterson? Literally the thing that I hate about David Peterson the most.
Well, and also, that's kind of bad. When, like, the Mets had that big of a lead, and Senga couldn't even get through 5.
It was rough. Senga did not pitch well in Friday's game. It was sad. I mean, like, it didn't end up mattering because the Mets were up by so much. But, yeah, he only made it through 4 2/3, and he gave up 7 hits and 2 home runs. It was not good. To a really bad offense.
Yeah.
He walked, like, 4 batters, too. Yeah.
Didn't he hit a few batters, or was that the next day? I can't remember. Carrasco. He hit 3 batters.
Carrasco hit 3 batters. But for Carrasco, unlike Senga, for Carrasco, that outing was a step forward. For Senga, it was a step back.
Hitting 3 batters is a step forward.
I mean,
and there's your good news, bad news. It's like the good news is that Carlos Carrasco had his best go around yet for the whole season.
Yep.
The bad news is the rest of that.
The bad news is that it wasn't even that good, but it was not awful, so it was his best start.
Every other part of that sentence.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, the Mets won, you know, 5 out of 6 games they played last week, and that was because the starting pitcher kept them in the game in every single game. Even the game they lost, you know, like I said, the Mets ended up scoring as many runs as the starting pitcher gave up, right? So it's not like the starting pitcher didn't keep them in the game. That was the David Peterson game, actually. The longest outing by the starting pitcher was the game they lost. And it was kind of, I mean, David Peterson took the loss, and it was kind of a tough luck loss on his part. You know, he gave up 2 runs in 5 2/3 innings. That's perfectly fine. They lost the game. But, you know, the starting pitchers have been fine, but they haven't gone deep enough into games. And that's where we need Scherzer to come back and do better as far as like lasting longer in the game. That's where we need Justin Verlander to come back. Like, I expect Carlos Carrasco to be a five and dive guy at this point in his career. I expect McGill and Peterson to mostly be five and dive guys. We need the aces to be better than that. We need Kodai Senga to be better than that. We need Verlander to be better than that and Scherzer to be better than that.
And I have all confidence that they will be better than that, but they need to be at least in, like, they need to actually like be here to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and also, you know, the Mets also got lucky that they were facing the A's when this happened and not the Dodgers who they're facing now.
Yep.
So now we'll see how that goes.
I mean, yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, like, yeah, and it's just, it's like I said, it's just having these trickle down effects to the bullpen, and this is how you get high leverage reliever Drew Smith in the sixth and seventh inning every other day, which we don't want.
On the other hand, it's nice to be able to say a high leverage reliever Drew Smith without being sarcastic about it.
It's true. I mean, he's been good.
he's been hit or miss. I feel like he's been good for like the first two batters and then all of a sudden falls apart and then Raley has to bail him out.
Yeah, it's true. Brooks Raley has had to come in a couple times to bail out Drew Smith in the past week or so, but he's done so. The bullpen is for the most part bent but not break. Broken, bent, but not broken.
Like you said, their blows have been contained to like small areas.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens there. Hopefully, the starting pitchers can start to go deeper into games and resolve this. Because it's not really sustainable what they're doing right now. And yeah, the Dodgers this week, a much more formidable opponent than the A's. I know that the Dodgers are 500 right now and they're not playing their best baseball, but they are always, always, always a threat.
Reports of the Dodgers' demise have been greatly exaggerated.
Yes, exactly. Like, they didn't spend the crazy amounts of money that in the offseason that they have spent previously, but that does not mean that they are not still a very talented team who could easily sweep the Mets if they wanted to. So we'll see what happens this week. We are recording this on Monday night, but because it is a West Coast road trip, the Monday night game has not yet occurred.
Ugh. And so as far as I'm concerned, it basically will not. I can't do West Coast anymore. Like, the 10 o'clock? Nope. I won't even look at it before I fall asleep.
I'm the sicko who's thriving. Night owl, hive rise.
I'll be watching and then fall asleep on the couch and wake up at 1 a.m. and be like, what happened?
Oh, I will suffer tomorrow because I have to get up. You know, I have to go to the office tomorrow. I'm getting up at 6:45. But no, I will stay up for the whole thing because I am a weirdo.
I will try, but
I remember and miss those days. It's just, yeah, no. Not.
I keep waiting for it to hit me. Like, one of these years, I will cease to be able to stay up till 1 a.m.
It's one of those things that is just, it hits different when it is a small child jumping on your face when you have 4 hours of sleep. That's the moment where you're like, oh, I can't do that.
I can't do that anymore.
It's real. Yeah, it's the face jumping that is the most memorable for me. Well, I don't do it anymore.
So we'll see how the Mets fare against the Dodgers this week. Hopefully they can eke out a series win. But
I like how you went really optimistically with that, because I was thinking eke out a win.
No,
yeah,
just like I'm elevated talking. It. That's you bring winning that energy. Series. We need that. Yes.
That is what the 2022 Mets did. They won series. They did that, and that was how they were successful. I am hoping for the same thing. The 2022 Mets won 101 games by not having that many winning streaks or losing streaks. And so far, the 2023 Mets have been similar in the sense that they haven't won too many games in a row and they haven't lost too many games in a row.
And they actually completed a damn sweep, which they I feel did? Like last year they didn't either. It was always 2 out of 3, 2 out of 3, 2 out of 3. It's kind of
but they also got swept, which is a little.
They did get swept, which I think like they didn't get swept last year until like
September.
Yeah,
was literally. It the Braves series?
Yeah.
Oh man, what a one to pick.
Yeah. But
not gonna get mad about that today. Not today.
To transition between Mets issues and wider baseball issues this week is a Mets related issue that sort of speaks to a wider problem in baseball, which is something that Rich Staff wrote about for Amazing Avenue earlier this week. We will link that piece in the show notes and the tweets because you should read it. It's really good. But it talks about the Mets new horrendous uniform patches, which if you've been living under a rock and haven't seen them yet, God bless. But they show up in Technicolor on the screen.
You can see them from space.
Yeah, like if you're watching the Mets on a TV that's bigger than, like, you know, your the size of your cell phone screen, like, they are very obviously there.
You won't miss
I also need to step in with this segment and just say that I am professionally affiliated with New York Presbyterian Hospitals, and they are a top-ranked hospital in the Northeast. And that's all I will say about it.
But as I also pointed out, that Steve and Alex Cohen have a wing in New York Presbyterian, so they're basically advertising themselves.
They do, shocker. To be fair, they have the Steve and Alexandra Cohen pediatric emergency room that I have spent a fair amount of time in. And it's amazing. They did a really, really nice job. They can advertise that if they want to.
Listen,
this is my favorite
pediatric emergency room.
Listen, I am not knocking New York Presbyterian Hospital, who I am sure does amazing work day in and day out. But the fact that it's not just the aesthetic of the whole thing, which has been talked about quite a bit. and Steve Cohen himself has said that he wants to, like, change the patch because it's A, like, really big, and B, just, like, he says it's Phillies colors and he doesn't like them.
And the whites don't match. This is the one that kills me. And it's not like one is cream and one is white, which is bad enough. But then they're supposed to both actually be white and they are not.
It's like shiny white and matte white. But, and, like, it's awful.
But why wasn't this planned out? Like, all of a sudden they're like, oh, they're slapping these patches on the uniform. Like, this should have been planned out in the offseason if you were going to do this.
I know, it's kind of weird. But I think, like, it's just, again, this is not a knock on New York Presbyterian Hospital. It is just it just feels extra dystopian that we're advertising, like, a hospital. Like, it just feels like so uniquely American capitalism that we're advertising a hospital and it's like, buy our healthcare, which should be free. Like, I hate it so much. I just hate the principle of it so much. Like, I already hate the fact that there's increasing advertising presence, like, in ballparks, on uniforms, like, all this stuff. But just, like, it's like an extra level of dystopian to put into having to be a hospital. And it's just this disturbing trend of just, like, ads in our face at all times is just, like, so American capitalism. Like, people who visit from other countries note this when they visit America. They're like, why are there ads everywhere? Like, it's very weird to people who aren't American. And, like, the other sport that where the uniform is, like, very advertising heavy is soccer. I don't for those of you who listen to the podcast and don't follow soccer, if you watch, like, a Premier League game, like, the front of the uniform isn't even the team name. It's, like, the advertiser. Like, so think of the Mets uniforms, but instead of saying Mets across the chest, it says, like, New York Presbyterian Hospital. That's how bad it is in soccer.
Well, pretty soon they're going to, like, look like NASCARs rolling up to the plate, too. Where it's just, like, the cars are all one big ad, too, where you don't even know who it is anymore.
Exactly.
I just can't wait till the Yankees cave, because you know they are going to eventually, and we can make fun of them.
I hope so, because I'm not optimistic that they will.
Oh, they'll cave.
But it's just, like, and Rich makes this point in his article. It's like, what is the point of having the richest owner in the sport if he's going to do advertising on the uniforms for money? Like,
but he's advertising himself, though.
Yeah, I know, but, like,
which makes it all the more weird. Like, dude.
Like, you have $17 billion. Do you really need to do this so you can have $17.01 billion? Like, It's just so off. I just hate the aesthetics of it. I hate the message it sends to like have these. And yeah, I would prefer the like walking ads in the sport be left to soccer and NASCAR. Like, this is why, even though I'm a huge soccer fan, I don't actually like really own any soccer jerseys except for like the US women's national team, like international kits, because the Washington Spirit, for example, I'm trying very hard to become a hardcore Spirit fan. It's an opportunity for me to have a fresh slate to root for a DC team that doesn't conflict with any of my existing rooting interests, right? The front of the Spirit uniform says CVS Health on it. Oh. I don't want to walk around with a CVS Health advertisement on my
CVS
chest.
Health should be paying you.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so I'm not going to buy a Spirit jersey. Like, I have a Spirit hoodie that's, like, not the jersey. Like, I have that, and I'm happy to, like, buy their merch that doesn't have the freaking logo on it, but the jerseys don't say Spirit on them.
Like, they have seem to be missing the point.
Yeah. They have the crest, like, this is how soccer jerseys are. They have the crest, like, very small in the corner, but you can't read it on TV. So when you watch... when you watch two soccer teams play each other on TV, it looks like the two like brands are playing. It's like the CVS Health versus whatever brand the other team is. It's awful.
Pepsi.
Pepsi. CVS Health versus Pepsi. It's like, are you serious? And that's what I'm scared of baseball turning into. I'm scared of it. Like, please don't do this.
Don't worry. They might be completely consumed by casinos before they have a chance to be completely consumed by advertising.
And also, you know, there's this, you know, that's the other thing. Like, all there's all this money being poured into the game. And yet there you have the Oakland A's that had like 5,000 people at the game, maybe more. And you're not taking care of your failing franchises.
Right. Yeah, it's just, I already ranted about the sports gambling thing when we talked about the Orioles putting that advertisement on Camden Yards. Yep. And it's just like, this is also a huge part of it. These two things go hand in hand. Like, you are, again, it's like a capitalism dystopian thing. Like, the ever increasing,
like squeezing every last possible drop of money that anyone could get.
Yeah. It just like makes me nauseous.
Like, let's put double-sided tape on the bottom of the player's shoes so if they step on any coins, the team can pick them up.
Right? It's just also like craven and gross, and I hate it. But yeah, speaking of MLB owners being craven and wanting to squeeze every dime that they possibly can out of our beloved sport.
Oh, what do we got now?
Many teams are now extending alcohol sales beyond the seventh inning because the games are shorter and concession sales are down. What did I say about the pitch clock when I did my pitch clock soapboxing? I said this: they're going to get mad about this because the concession sales are going to go down. Guess what exactly happened?
Well, who was it on the Phillies? The way he phrased it was excellent, and I hate myself that I'm probably going to misquote him, but he said something like, once you start messing with the billionaire's money, you know something's going to change.
Yes, it was Matt Strom, pitcher on the Philadelphia Phillies. He was on a podcast recently, and he talked about this, and he gave an excellent quote about it. And he said, quote, "The reason we stopped selling alcohol in the seventh before was to give our fans time to sober up and drive home safe, correct? So now with the faster paced game and me just being a man of common sense, if the game is going to finish quicker, would we not move the beer sales up to the sixth inning to give our fans more time to sober up and drive home?"
Instead, to be clear, you cannot sober up in three innings. I just want this to be like established. It's like, it was always kind of a half-assed rule anyway. You should find a better way to stop your fans from driving drunk. But it's probably not the way to do it.
Yeah. Strom said, "Instead, we're going to the eighth, and now you're putting fans and family at risk driving home with people who just drank beers 22 minutes ago." And then he also said, and this is the part that Linda alluded to, "I'm not surprised by it. When you mess with billionaires' dollars, they find a way to make their dollars back. My thing is, when you're looking at the safety of your fans, that's probably not the smartest decision."
Well, and I tweeted this too, when the Rockies made the decision to sell beer into the eighth. The minor leagues already tested this, and they flat out said they saw no change in concessions. Zero. Because people were gone by that point anyway, and they said it wasn't a high time to sell concessions anyway. So basically, the major leagues are saying, we know this, but we want to make money anyway, and we're just using it as an excuse.
Yeah, it was always going to be... It was always going to be the line that they pulled.
Yeah, but when it's flat out wrong.
Yeah.
They're just doing it to do it and make more money.
Right. And it sucks. I mean, like, Maggie is absolutely right. Like, the existing rules do not necessarily prohibit fans from driving drunk. And, you know, you can talk all you want about individual responsibility. And I agree. Like, every individual person should take the responsibility and not drive drunk. But I just feel like we as a society should not be facilitating this with our with our alcohol policy at ballparks. And, you know, like, we should be as a society pushing for, you know, more use of mass transit to ball games. And, like, that's great for a place like Citi Field that is right on a really good public transit system by American standards, at least, you know, a city with a pretty robust public transit system. Ditto Nats Park here in D.C. It's right on the metro, a pretty good public transit system. Most American cities and most of the ballparks do not have access to public transit. Should that change? Absolutely. Is that going to change overnight? No, it's not. So people, we're not going to, like, the point being, people are going to drive to ball games and people are going to drink at the ball game. And it's just, I just don't think that the policies should be pushing more and more people toward more alcohol and toward more driving.
Well, and then it especially made me mad that the Rockies are doing it, because you know that money's not going back into the team. They don't give a shit about the Rockies. Dick Monfort doesn't give a shit about the Rockies. He's right. Using it to line his pockets. So he's putting people at risk to just make himself more money.
Right. And yeah, I don't want to belabor this point too much, because Chris and Brian did talk about this last week on Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World Series, so you should check that out also. But yeah, I felt like we had to say something about this, because it's just craven greed, and yep. It's frustrating. I feel like craven is the word of the week. Speaking of craven, Mike Clevenger uses Gold Digger by Kanye West as his warm-up song. Because of course he does.
Of course he does.
When he was asked about it, he's like, I'm only sticking to baseball questions. So he knew he was being an asshole, but then refused to talk. Like, he wanted the attention for it because he knew he was going to get asked for it, and then refused to talk about it. No! Why'd you do it? Stick up, tell me.
He and Bauer are like these real life embodiment of internet trolls. I mean, that is the idea. The idea is to make you mad.
Elon Musk.
And he doesn't have to answer the question, because just the fact that it was asked gave him what he wanted, which was to make people mad.
Yeah.
They're Elon Musk if Elon Musk was a professional baseball player. Like, it's the same personality. Any skills. Yeah. It's the same personality.
Such a coward.
Yeah, like, they're cowardly and they're trolls and they're, like, not even good at it. Yeah, the exact quote that he gave when asked about it was, are you a music producer? No. Okay. Well, if you have a baseball question, I'm here for you.
It's like, such an asshole.
Like, shut up. God, yeah. You suck.
Well, and then also his one of the White Sox players was stalking his accuser's Instagram account.
Yes, very creepy.
Yeah.
One of Clevenger's teammates on the White Sox, God, I forget his name. I think his first name is Oscar.
It is. Yeah, damn, I can't remember what his last name is. I can't
remember his name. I'm trying not to, like, remember who these people are, because I don't care. I care very much about the impact that their actions are having. I don't care to remember who they are, because they are assholes and I don't want to waste brain space on remembering who they are. But one of Clevenger's teammates has been, like, basically cyber stalking Clevenger's accuser and, like, going through all her old shit on Instagram and, like, passive aggressively liking, like, every post. Oof. It's really gross.
The White Sox just need to, like, They used to be an okay organization. Now they're like just one of the worst.
They need a major vibes purge. Just yeah. Like, God.
And they've got some good foundation there. They got like Tim Anderson.
Yeah. Tim Anderson is great vibes. But no, it's.
Giolito used to be until he kind of ruined that in spring training.
But yeah, it's just like. It's a double whammy with this stupid walk-up song because, of course, like, the implication of the lyrics of the song is that he's directing it at his accuser. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just one of them or all of them, but, you know, he's directing the sentiment of the song. And then, of course, it's by an artist who is the worst and has been proven to be the worst. But, like, he sees himself as, you know... He sees himself and Kanye as like one in the same.
Kindred like, spirits.
Yeah, kindred spirits. Like they are like unfairly persecuted. Like that's clearly how he sees it. So it's just gross all around. And yeah, Clevenger's buddy, Trevor Bauer, made his debut in Japan, not even for the big league team yet. He made his debut in the minor leagues because he's still ramping up from not having pitched in 2 years. And he did a samurai sword after he struck out a Japanese minor leaguer. It's like, God, could you be any more of an asshole?
Look at the big guy.
Yeah. So impressive. Like, wow.
Oh, okay.
Like, what a freaking loser. Like, again, it's like if Elon Musk, it's like Elon Musk, like posting Doge memes and all of his fans being like, epic, sir. Like, that's what these guys are. Ugh. And all their stands will flock to defend them every time.
Yeah, it's so pathetic.
It really is pathetic.
I believe, as the kids say, cringe.
It is extremely cringe. Yeah. Very cringe. But we will end the show with some joy, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Can I say my man's?
Yes, you can.
JD's, even though it breaks my heart, he's living his best life in San Francisco. Like, he had a grand slam the other day. He's
hanging out with Wilmer Flores and Dan Ruff.
Yeah, and Michael Conforto.
True, and Michael Conforto.
I was forgetting. Having a great time out there. They're all
it is
happy.
Quite the little alumni club they've got.
Like, the whole top of their lineup was former Mets.
That's kind of wild. And we're seeing them soon. It's going to be wild.
It's going to be bad. Know.
And I did buy tickets to see them when they come to City, so I'll wear my JD jersey. But I got yelled at when I drafted JD for our fantasy team. Michael yelled at me, but I make no apologies for it.
And it's true. He deserves to be yelled at back. I will convey this message. He should eat crow for that because
he's been doing fantastic.
JD's been really good.
Yes, he's been. I won my week because he hit home runs for me. So I'm just, you know. I'm sad, and I'm sad the trade didn't work out, but I'm happy that he seems to be happy and the Giants fans seem to like him because he's a goofball, so how could you not like him? So I'm counting the days until I can wear my JD jersey at City Field again.
Pete Alonso had like an all-time gif this week that was very similar to the JD gifs of old.
I think I missed that one.
It was like no thoughts, just vibes.
It was a classic empty head like moment from Pete. Like he's in the dugout just vibing and he's just like, he basically is just like clapping and you can tell he has like nothing going on.
No, he's singing along to Tom Petty.
He was singing along to Tom Petty.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And like doing a drum solo to Tom Petty.
I'll send you the video, Maggie.
Those are some beautiful JD vibes.
It's incredible.
Although somebody, a beautiful Giants tweeted JD in the dugout going, oh, shit. And I'm so happy he's still JD and that the Giants fans have found it.
Same vibe as Kodai Senga when there was the pitch clock violation. He was like, yes.
Yahoo!
I always love
my
that.
Heart so happy too, that
Yeah. I'm going to get a lot of mileage out of that one. Yeah. I still get mileage out of the Taiwan Walker one. The Taiwan Walker face in the dugout where he was like,
Oh, that's a good one too. See, JD was so good for the gifts.
Yeah, he did have perfect reaction gifts for all scenarios.
Yeah, there was literally one for every occasion.
It's true.
Oh, when he won the game for them against the Tigers the other day. He had a big home run that tied the game up in the eighth inning. A big 3-run home run.
Well, I think he celebrated a lot.
The Tigers, now that's a ball club that is in competition with the A's and the Nationals for being the worst team.
Forget they exist sometimes.
Me too.
Genuinely not good. Do forget they exist.
Poor Javi Baez is not having a good time.
No.
But like, he purposely chose this.
You knew he was going to be a lot of therapy.
It's true. He has a lot of money. It's fine.
Yeah.
But he's hitting like 100 and literally got pulled out of the game the other day for doing a little league
brain fart
level error, like forgetting how many outs there were or something like that.
It was
not good. And he got pulled in the middle of the game for that. Yikes. Anyway, this is walk off wins.
But we love JD Davis.
We do.
Not getting thrown out of games.
No, he would never.
Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is that we had our city field debut for the season. It was spring break last week.
Yay.
And there was a weekday game. And so I piled the Wiggin children into the 7 train. And we hit up city field and we had a great time. It was the Tyler McGill start.
My parents were there.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. I can't believe I missed them. So we got to see a Pete home run and a Francisco Lindor home run. I was wearing my Lindor jersey, which was very exciting to my small children. Still not as exciting as the Pete Alonso home run, which just about threw everyone into the stratosphere. It was just a nice game. It was just like a fun game to watch. Although it was like, man, they made those games shorter. That one didn't feel much shorter. That game somehow managed to feel pretty long, but that's okay. We had our Shake Shack. It's not my choice, but they're very sweet children. And they led lots of Let's Go Mets chants. And yeah, it was a great way to kick off the season. It was really nice.
That's awesome. Weekday day games, the choice of spring break children and retirees alike.
Oh, they're wonderful.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
I am too.
Like, my parents always text me that when they're going to the game, and they always go to the weekday day games because there's never anybody else there, and they can like stride up right to the front of the line and Shake Shack, and I'm like, man, I want it.
Especially now, before you have to deal with the camp kids, like when schools get out.
Yeah,
there is also they did not offer the option that one of my children wanted, but there is a limited menu available to like pre-order and just pick up with no line at all.
That's so kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I like leave it to my children to want a Shake Shack hot dog that is not available for the pre-order.
Of course.
Nathan's not good enough for you.
Not the hot dogs everywhere else in the stadium. Only the Shake Shack hot dogs. That's fine. We waited on the line. But it was not too bad a line, and there was good stuff happening early on, and we got to enjoy it from the screen, which is very large.
Oh my god, the scoreboard's so big.
It's really big.
You have to see it in real life to truly appreciate the monstrosity that it
is. I mean, we went to see the Mario movie on Friday, and one of the first things Ellie said when we walked in was, I think the Mets screen is bigger. And
oh, yes,
absolutely correct. Like, absolutely. Yes. Like, really. But it was also funny. They seem to be having some technical difficulties with it. And that always cracks me up when giant screens have technical difficulties, because it makes me feel like we're all in this together.
Yeah. We've all been there.
I also can't get the adjustment to be just right on my TV.
So true. So true. My walk-off win for this week, Michael will be very proud. My walk-off win for this week is that the Knicks won their first playoff game.
Yay!
Yay! I feel like the reason that I am appreciating like this season that the Knicks are having is that it reminds me so much of, and even perhaps even more so, like it reminds me of when the Mets are good, like the whole city becomes a Knicks city.
It really
and
does.
It's really cool to see everybody like rally behind like one team. And it's funny because it's like the Nets are also in the playoffs and nobody cares.
It's so sad.
Like, it's just everyone's so excited for the Knicks because, and you know, there's it's like similar vibes to the Mets because like they've gone a long time without winning anything, and it's the same as the Mets in that way.
Some very questionable team management at times.
Yeah, they've dealt with a lot of times. Pain. And hopefully they're like, I don't know, like I don't know enough to say like how much of a chance they actually have of winning the whole thing. I know that they're not like one of the top seeds, but I think that it's just like this is a very fun team to watch. It has been a fun team to watch, and it's a fun team to root for. So I'm hoping that they at least have a pretty deep run so I can keep enjoying the playoff basketball and like really the first season where I've like cared at all.
Yeah, I have to support my man Obi.
Obi Toppin, he had a good game in the first game. Obi Toppin
did. Makes me so happy. Well, and also, if people know their history, the Rangers are playing the Devils, and the Knicks are in the playoffs the same time as the Rangers. And so that means there might be a Ford Bronco that's
Oh, right.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know either of any of those other sports references, but I know what a Ford Bronco means.
Yeah, this is the last time it's happened.
Right. So
the Rangers playing the Devils and the Knicks in the playoffs.
Linda is referring famously to when one of the last times the Knicks were in the playoffs, the last time the Knicks were any good was in the 90s. And, you know, obviously something else very prominent was happening in the 90s, in the early 90s. The Knicks were in the playoffs when the literal Ford Bronco chase, the OJ Simpson chase was happening.
Brother was so mad because they did picture in picture. So yeah, they interrupted the big screen,
the playoff game for it. Yep.
Yep. And then because Patrick Ewing was having the game of his life that day, and my brother was so mad that he could barely see it because it was in the corner.
Yeah, so the Knicks being in the playoffs again might just be enough to cause a whole national emergency of some kind.
Well, the only thing I love more than being a Mets fan is being a bandwagoner. And so I am thrilled to go all in on some Knicks action. I already have the colors.
Yes,
it's
true.
The Rangers won the Stanley Cup that year, so maybe it's good vibes.
There you go.
Maybe it is good vibes. Both the Knicks and the Rangers are playing tomorrow night. It's going to be chaotic.
Yeah.
City's going to be feral. MSG is going to be feral.
Walk into any packed bar and loudly demand that they put on the Mets game.
Well, the Mets are not until 10. So
it's true. They don't even conflict. West Coast road trips, God bless.
Yeah. The Mets had this planned out. I appreciate that.
It's true. It's true.
So but it's, you know, it's hard because you're watching these playoff games and you're so tense and like you're so anxious, and then all of a sudden you put the Mets game on, you're like, oh, like the come down is like
it's kind of nice though to just like watch one game of a 162 game season. It's like, ah, yes, this is like a regular sports experience.
As I say to my kids, there's another one tomorrow.
Yeah,
exactly.
Although I didn't have to say that this week because I forgot to mention that they are now on a 6-game winning streak. So not getting to teach them a lot of there's always tomorrow opportunities, but.
Bring them to more games, Maggie.
Yeah.
I'm trying, man. Schools get really pissy about that.
Yeah, true. Fair enough. Yeah. Stay in school, kids.
Yeah.
Stay in school. You may learn better than to be a Mets fan. But yeah, that does it for the show this week. You can go to homerunapplesauce.com to find all of our fantastic pods. You can support us by going to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. Your dollars really help keep the lights on at our podcast and support all the work that we do. So thank you, thank you, thank you to everyone who has already become a patron, and to everyone who will become a patron in the future. You can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app of choice. Just search Home Run Applesauce and you can find all of our fantastic shows right there. We are proudly part of the Fans First Sports Network. You can follow Home Run Applesauce on all of the social media, Twitter and Instagram at HR Applesauce. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can email us. Oh, and you can also follow us on Instagram and TikTok. I always forget to say the other two, but we are there also at A Pod of Their Own on all of them. You can email the show aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Sorfage.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
If you haven't already, please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there's no crying in podcasting. Yay. Do we want to do Mensch of the Week?
Yeah, I'm good to knock that out.
Yeah,
let's
sure.
Let's do it.
It's not a long one.
Well, yeah, it's not a long one. We'll get it done before first pitch. Let's do it.
Okay. We got this.
Goals.
Goals. All right. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Hello, A Pod of Their Own listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own's Mensch of the Week. I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
This week, our Mensch of the Week is Eduardo Escobar. He obviously has not been lighting the world on fire with his on-field performance. And
which is not what it's about anyway.
No, right. No.
That is not what this is about.
No judgment.
As we already talked about in great depth in the main show this week, Brett Beatty has been called up to the big leagues, which is very exciting for all Mets fans. You know, we've been hoping for this day for a long time. We had wished that it would have happened to start the season, but the day has finally arrived. Beatty has been absolutely tearing it up in the minors. Meanwhile, Escobar has not been doing so well in the big leagues this year. And so the Mets' hand was forced. Let's be real. There were no developmental objectives. That was not a part of the equation. It never was. The Mets' hand was forced. And Beatty is up and is the best thing for the team. But, you know, like, it's not easy when you're a veteran who's towards the end of his career, who's struggling, who's getting replaced by a younger player. It is never easy for anybody. But of course, Eduardo Escobar is handling it with grace and with class. And I would expect nothing less, honestly. Eduardo Escobar is honestly like the perpetual mensch of this team.
Yeah.
Like,
it was only a matter of time before he got this award.
Exactly. And I feel like it won't be the last for him. Even though his role on the team is going to be reduced, he is never going to give up the resident mensch role because he will continue to be a mensch. He is just the definition of a mensch.
It's all over. Every time you see him, it's just like there.
Yeah.
Menchiness. This is an excerpt from a clip, not from a clip, from an excerpt from an article about Escobar, a previous article about Escobar on the Mets. Mets third baseman Eduardo Escobar likes to tell teammates, "I'm proud of you, man," saying it's something to make people feel good. He said he began using the saying with Tori Luvolo, his manager with the Diamondbacks, from 2018 to 2021, inspiring them to order t-shirts with the phrase. And the Mets apparently donned "Proud of You, Man" t-shirts when Escobar celebrated becoming the 10th Venezuelan player to reach 10 years of major league service. All the Mets wore t-shirts with "Proud of You, Man" on it with his face. So that just goes to show, like, how much Escobar is beloved in this clubhouse and every clubhouse he's been a part of. He is just one of the most universally, like, beloved players in the game. And he proved that again this week when, in the face of, you know, his playing time being being like reduced by Brett Beatty's call up, he said, quote, "The kid deserves it. He deserves everything he's getting right now." He had nothing but good things to say about Brett Beatty, which is just so classy.
And Beatty is so lucky to have someone like Escobar who is happy to help him adapt and to advise and support him. Like, that's a really positive, it's a positive situation for everyone, because Escobar still gets to play his role, and and Beatty's coming into a welcoming place, and it's not there's not a lot of conflict coming out of that. It's really gonna help everybody.
And you know, Escobar is going to serve as a mentor too. If he has like any issues at third, you know,
exactly,
Escobar is going to be there for him.
Yeah. It's just, it'd be easy to be bitter or resentful when, you know, it's the end of your career. You still feel like you can contribute. But it's just not happening for you at the moment. And the Mets have this prospect knocking down the door, who's going to take your playing time. It would be easy to be, you know, bitter about that. And Escobar doesn't seem to be displaying one ounce of that, because that's just not who the person that he is. And I think that like a lot of the argument from folks who didn't necessarily want Beatty to be starting in the major leagues, I think it was a very small minority of people. But there were definitely people who were worried about, you know, deference to the veteran. And like, you know, Buck Showalter is a manager that often gives a lot of deference to veterans. And people were worried about how Escobar would take this and, you know, not giving him the chance to have the job first before giving it to the young guy outright. But my counter argument to that was always like, if Escobar was going to react in such a negative way, then he was not the person that we thought he was. And he was the veteran player that he was not doing his job as a veteran player to react negatively to that. Because part of the job of veteran players is to mentor younger players. And I think Escobar more than anybody understands that.
Well, even, you know, last year and, you know, so far this year too, he didn't have the best year last year until September. And he never let his struggles get him down. He was never visibly frustrated. Complaining about anything. He just had the same like positive attitude going through, and you know, he's just, you know, and I think it's a good, he could end up being a good ambassador for the game too. And you know, like you said, like he's the 10th Venezuelan player to reach 10 years. Like that's a good role model for people of Venezuela to have now. And I know he did really want to, did he end up playing or did he not end up playing in the World Baseball Classic?
He did.
Yeah. Cause I know that meant a lot to him. And, you know, there was that whole debate of, oh, he might lose his job to Beatty if he goes to play for Venezuela, but you know, it meant a lot to him. And, you know, things happened the way they happened, and now here's Beatty, but you know what? His attitude never changed. And so, you know what? Kudos to him for always keeping that same level, even keel, positive attitude, because clearly it also rubs off on his teammates. So, and then the like people, you need those people around, because it's a long season and it's easy to get down when things aren't going so well. And when it's hot and you're cranky and you're in the doldrums of summer. So, just to have that positive impact on the clubhouse is also a good thing for all the guys.
I think we always said, you know, when we talked about last year's team, you need the Jacob deGroms on the team, but you also need the Eduardo Escobars.
Yes.
Very different styles of leadership.
Yeah, you need that balance.
Everything in balance. And I mean, obviously, the most is being made of Brett Beatty coming up as the young guy and Escobar mentoring him, since he plays the same position. But Francisco Alvarez, the other young player on the Mets right now, the other rookie, is Venezuelan. And so to have Escobar's presence on the team, I think is a big deal for someone like Alvarez. I want an Alvarez Escobar buddy comedy, and I want it right now.
It's hard to get a read on Alvarez's personality yet. He hasn't really said much.
I think he's stressed out and like adjusting, and you know, like obviously he's still learning the language, and so it's, I think it's a lot of an adjustment, but I think his personality will come through a lot more as he gets comfortable in the big leagues. But the Mets are not lacking for personality because they have Eduardo Escobar on the team. And like, if you aren't watching the Mets reels on Instagram, you are absolutely missing out on primo Eduardo Escobar content day in and day out. I highly recommend, if you have an Instagram account, to follow the Mets on Instagram. If you don't already, which probably literally everybody who listens to this podcast already does, but seriously, like they do these little like pre-game, like they do these little interviews like during batting practice and stuff where they ask all the players the same question. It's usually something silly like, if an actor were to play you in a movie, what actor would it be, or something like that, or like, what's your favorite pre-game meal, like silly things like that, just to get fun answers out of the players. And Escobar has the best answer every single time.
Yep.
The funniest answer. He always
I don't think he's even really trying. It's just him being endearing.
He starts out by saying, give me 5 minutes, 5 minutes, like every time. And then he comes back and says something absolutely hilarious 100% of the time. When they asked
the hidden talent one
was so good, because Escobar started just like broke out into song and started singing.
Yes, it's so endearing. I love it.
It was so good. Anyway, Escobar is a mensch, and we love him, and Brett Beatty couldn't have a better mentor than him, and we're so happy and proud of him for being classy, but we didn't expect anything different.
Yes. And thank you for bringing us joy with the Instagram content.
Yeah, absolutely. So that does it for Mensch of the Week this week. You can go to homerunapplesauce.com and check out all of our fantastic pods on there. You can support us by going to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. You can follow Home Run Applesauce on social media, Twitter and Instagram at HR Applesauce. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search Home Run Applesauce and we will be right there. We are proudly part of the Fans First Sports Network. You can follow our show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. And you can also follow us on Instagram and TikTok at the same handle. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Linda is at Linda Cerevich, and Maggie is at Maggie162. Please rate and review the podcast if you haven't already. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro to this show, the original intro and outro music to this show is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in college.